At this very moment, the value of one Bitcoin is $16,850. Bitcoin has more than doubled in value since mid-November, and the gains we're seeing in digital currency is getting a lot of people talking about it. And we'll spend the next hour getting a better grasp of cryptocurrency here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The supply of Bitcoin is mathematically limited to 21 million Bitcoins, and that can never be changed. But there's a whole lot more to why Bitcoin has moved to prime time. Jen Schwartz is a senior editor at Scientific American. She's the editor of a new special report called The Future of Money. It appears in the January 2018 edition of the magazine. Jen, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, first, let us get a good working definition of exactly what is Bitcoin.
So Bitcoin, in sort of its simplest definition, is the very first successful big cryptocurrency. And cryptocurrency just means that it is a digitally encrypted currency. So that's sort of the simple way to describe it.
But so what does a digital currency really mean? Does it mean that there just aren't paper bills, or does it go a lot further than that?
It goes a lot further than that. It basically means that instead of, from the technological perspective, it means that it is transacted via something called blockchain technology, which is this new digital infrastructure of how transactions move between people. So there's the technology element, but there's also an ideology behind Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, which is that it cuts out middlemen. So the idea is that instead of going through a bank or having government regulation, that you are transacting person to person.
So blockchain, I understand there's a lot of numbers put together, and it's very foggy to me how blockchain works. Can you explain it?
Sure. It's very foggy to everyone, really. It breaks down to, you can get into the nitty-gritty of the math and the cryptography, but essentially it is a system by which you have transactions that are added to a blockchain by essentially raw computing power, is a simple way to describe it. And so instead of having bankers or sort of a banking system pass money from, person to person, you have a mathematical consensus mechanism, and you're basically using raw computing power to prove that it is that it's validated, which sounds fairly abstract, but without getting into all of the math and a whole bunch of terms, that's effectively how it works.
And then what is this peer-to-peer network as the Bitcoin moves around?
So a lot of people might be familiar with peer-to-peer when they think about Napster, mm-hmm. which was one of the original peer-to-peer services. So basically that just means that instead of having some central entity, you are transacting or moving data from person to person. So what that means for Bitcoin is that you're basically have computers all over the world. It's highly decentralized, which is the entire purpose of Bitcoin, so that it is spread across many, many different people who are effectively strangers to each other. And there are proving mechanisms, that basically allow Bitcoin to be traded without being spent twice. So the trust and the validation is being done through technology as opposed to through humans.
I understand the rules are that there's a finite number of Bitcoins, 21 million Bitcoins in our world. How is one created?
It's essentially a lot of programming and coding at its very core. And the big question that comes up with Bitcoin is, where does this value even come from? And that's one of the biggest questions that people debate and talk about. If Bitcoin is not backed by hard assets or it's not backed by government promises, where does this come from? How does it exist? And that's sort of part of the larger social experiment of cryptocurrencies that we're entering now, and confusion abounds about what that is now and what it'll look like in the future.
And Jen, are you also saying that computers hold the wealth in our society?
not that the computers hold the wealth. Really, it's a transfer of control, of trust. So the idea, I mean, it all functions effectively on the internet, but the idea is that people hold the wealth. So instead of a central bank holding, you know, your money, you're passing it directly between ordinary people, and the digital currency is stored in different ways. It's stored in keys. It's stored, it's basically stored digitally without in different forms of wallets. All of these things are now being innovated and built. So it's really, it's a very volatile space right now, and it's fluctuating all the time.
Talking with Jen Schwartz, she is a senior editor at Scientific American. We're discussing the rise of Bitcoin, understanding what is cryptocurrency and the whole craze of Bitcoin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you bought into the Bitcoin hype? If so, what made you jump in? Do you think cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin are the way of the future? Or is this a bubble waiting to burst? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jen, we're having this conversation right now because we've seen prices of Bitcoin just going crazy. This is a currency that started the year valued at under $1,000. Now, yesterday and even today, we've seen it surging past $17,000. What is going on here?
So, in the package that we put together for Scientific American, one of the things that I really wanted to try to understand is where all this volatility comes from. So right now, a lot of people are talking about Bitcoin, and they're seeing this massive surge. But, you know, as of only a couple months ago, there were massive drops in the price of Bitcoin as well. So it's not that it's just surging upward. It's certainly trending ever upward, but it's really been all over the map, and there have been wild fluctuations in the price. And part of that is because Bitcoin's value is so up for debate about what it means, and that's why it's wildly speculative. One of our experts said what has any value, or what has no value, rather, can have any price, and that's why we're seeing it all over the map right now.
So is Bitcoin still this fringe concept out there, or has it hit the mainstream? Has it hit prime time?
It's really interesting. Bitcoin as a digital currency, I think, is still a fringe thing. The people who are getting involved in it and actually investing in it, hopefully they are not doing so because they think it is a secure way to invest their life savings. It is certainly not. But it's more of an entertainment thing, and more certainly of participating in this really fascinating social experiment. So Bitcoin itself may still be fringe, and I think will continue to be because of its various limitations and issues. But the concept behind Bitcoin, the cryptocurrency, this idea of peer-to-peer transactions, I think that's really surging into public consciousness, and what it means for the future of trading and just economic systems is really starting to become fascinating to a wider audience.
And on the Chicago exchanges, I understand that there's now futures trading for Bitcoin. Is that correct?
Yes. And that's a large part of why we're seeing it in the news recently, is it just has this larger profile now. And now that there is futures trading, people are really getting involved. You know, to some extent, it's seen as legitimizing Bitcoin during this time when you have some people saying it is this wild bubble, don't touch it. But at the same time, people are really curious. And so that's why it's been in the news recently and why there's been a lot of interest and the price has surged.
And Bitcoin isn't the only cryptocurrency out there. It's the one we hear about the most, certainly, but there are alternatives. Is that right?
Yes. So one of the misconceptions is that Bitcoin is the only cryptocurrency, when in reality there are many, many more. There's new ones all the time. There's a proliferation of cryptocurrencies, and I think we'll see more of that in the future. There's only a few major ones right now, And again, how useful they are and who they're useful for is really still to be seen. But what will be interesting is, as the sort of concept of cryptocurrency changes and evolves, which ones will ultimately rise perhaps to become more useful for ordinary people.
Bitcoin seems to be the hottest investment trend these days. It has been on a tear since the start of 2017, but there's a lot of conflicting information out there about digital currencies. Market watchers say Bitcoin is a scary bubble that's destined to burst. We're talking about the underlying technology, how this currency works, and what these peer-to-peer networks make, how they make the currency go round. Scientific American senior editor Jen Schwartz is with us. You can join us as well on Bitcoin, 800-642-1234. Do you think cryptocurrencies are on the rise? Let's discuss right after this news update. South Korea is home to three of the world's biggest Bitcoin exchanges. On any given day, the country accounts for as much as 20% of all Bitcoin trades around the world. With so many small investors going wild, the country last week said it had formed a task force to study what it called the, quote, cryptocurrency problem. We're exploring the world of cryptocurrency this hour. Why Bitcoin seems so hot. On this hour of the morning show, I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Jen Schwartz stays with us. She is a senior editor at Scientific American. She edited a new special report on Bitcoin called The Future of Money. It appears in next month's issue of the magazine. Your thoughts and questions on Bitcoin at 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jen, so we've established what Bitcoin is. Now, how, if you wanted to buy Bitcoin, how do you go about acquiring the currency?
So if you wanted to go about buying Bitcoin, you have to basically operate through a Bitcoin exchange. And this is where things start to get murky, because while the concept of trading money peer-to-peer sounds really great in theory, you have to build these third-party applications to exchange the money, to store the money, to have access to the money. So that's where there are all these little vulnerabilities, and that's where people have seen some of the issues with this currency of money being stolen or disappearing. That's where those vulnerabilities exist. So you have to go through these third-party systems. Some of them are great, and some of them are less so. And of course, much of this is all still unregulated.
Let's go to Marty, who joins us from Lake Geneva. Hi, Marty. Go ahead.
Good morning. Much like the coal and gas industry looking to quash solar, because in essence, it seems like they'd be taking food off their plate, I can't help but think that the banksters are going to view this in the same way. Tell me I'm wrong.
You're not wrong at all. What's really interesting, actually, is that for a while, a lot of our traditional banking system was flatly dismissive of Bitcoin. And what we're seeing now is that a lot of the financial services industry globally is looking at the technology that is underneath Bitcoin that makes it tick, and they are researching it and adopting it for their own systems. So what is really interesting is that while Bitcoin was designed as this decentralized currency, it can now be used, the technology, to create highly centralized systems.
So using the technology almost in the exact reverse of its intention?
The reverse of it, the intention of sort of the original adopters and the people or person who created the Bitcoin network initially, which we don't know who that is. It's a mysterious entity.
And this was like 9 years ago?
This was in 2008, and the first Bitcoin was in 2009.
Okay.
So it's definitely, the technology has been adopted by not just the financial services industry, but all sorts of industries, because really, it doesn't have to be money that you're transacting, but any kind of data.
Well, Marty, thanks for the call. Let's go to Mike, who joins us in Madison. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. So I used to be a Bitcoin miner, So basically that means is I had a pile of computers that did nothing but create digital code. So I'd like to give a clear definition of what Bitcoin is, because I've explained this a lot over the years to many of people around the country. And so then the easiest layman's terms, an example of what Bitcoin is if you take your credit card or your debit card and you swipe that card into a machine, that's not real money. It's taking that dollar amount and converting it to a digital number and a digital code. So $10 could be 3,001. So what Bitcoin is that same digital code. It's just basically unencryptable. I mean, unhackable at this time because of its encryption rate.
So Mike, are you still a miner?
I'm not. I got out of the mining just because the computers can't keep up with the cost of running the computers is not compatible with the amount of Bitcoin that they make. The computing rate has surpassed the exponential rate of how fast our computers run. But Bitcoin has changed the computing world in the past few years. Bitcoin has changed the way that computers work and the amount of math and computing that computers do. It's revolutionized the world in computing.
Let's get Jen in here to respond. Go ahead, Jen.
Sure. So that's another really interesting facet of all of this, is that in the beginning, miners like Mike were, you know, that's how the network works, basically, is miners validate through computing power that transactions are valid. Now, as time went on, people got, you know, sort of smart to this and realized if you combined computing power into these large pools, because it has nothing to do with skill, it's just raw power, then you would have a better chance effectively at being able to compete for the essentially the special codes, if you will, that validate transactions. So it really takes a lot of computing power, which uses a ton of electricity, and that's become one of the biggest problems of the Bitcoin network as it expands, and really many cryptocurrencies, is that it takes a lot of energy to produce this stuff. And so it doesn't make sense now for individual miners to operate, because you'd spend way more money on your electricity bill than you ever would in the reward system of mining Bitcoin.
Well, Mike, are you trading Bitcoin?
I do trade a little bit, but right now with the fantastic, I actually got out of it when Bitcoin was around $600. I shut down all my machines and sold my fancy miners, and I stopped using Bitcoin and just sat on it. So currently I'm doing a small amount of trading, but right now, honestly, I don't have a lot left because I didn't know how the Bitcoin futures were going to go, and I spent a bunch of it.
So you divested. How did you spend the money?
You know, I in the early days when Bitcoin was just starting to be accepted by online vendors, I used it to buy things. You know, I'm a hunter here in Wisconsin, so I used it to buy some hunting supplies and some other things like a new laptop. And, of course, now it's accepted in many, many places. There are even a few restaurants here in town that and across the country that accept Bitcoin. And it's growing daily. So now you can actually spend it. Back when I was doing it, there weren't a whole lot of places you could actually spend your Bitcoin. But now there are plenty of retailers that would love to take your Bitcoin.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for contributing to the conversation. Jen, it sounds like, you know, the days of being able to walk down the street to perhaps pay for your groceries with Bitcoin may soon be ending?
I would say that it's not perhaps ending.
Okay.
There's going to be this whole sort of adoption period. And, you know, I think we're going to see not just adoption to Bitcoin, but to other cryptocurrencies. What will cryptocurrency ATMs look like? Will it be Bitcoin? Will it be multiple cryptocurrencies? Who decides who the leaders are? So, you know, I think you're going to just see this really being worked out over the next couple of years as we have sort of, we see who the winners and losers are in this as it all shakes out.
Is it true that more and more retailers are accepting Bitcoin?
It is true. I think that you know, people are trying to get on board with this, and you know, future thinking people, and people who are excited about what all of this means. Certainly, I do still think it is pretty firmly, at least in the U.S., in the realm of novelty. However, there are places where using Bitcoin as your day-to-day currency might make more sense than a national currency. And a good example of that is in Venezuela, where there is hyperinflation. So, you know, the national currency is incredibly unreliable and worth less and less every day. And in a place like that, the citizens are seeing that Bitcoin is actually a really smart investment, and it's actually less risky than their national currency. And in places like that, you have a lot of retailers accepting Bitcoin because more people are using it.
Talking right now with Jen Schwartz. Her magazine, Scientific American, will publish a Bitcoin special report next month in which she edited. Your thoughts and questions on Bitcoin at 800-642-1234. Do you think you want to buy some Bitcoin? Why or why not? What confuses you about cryptocurrency? 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jen, who is Bitcoin aimed at? Who is the target audience?
Bitcoin's original target audience, I suppose the people who were originally interested in it. It was firmly, the sort of techno-idealist world. A lot of the, Silicon Valley, folks, programmers, certainly from the computer science world, who were really interested in looking at the code of this. And a lot of the fascinating ways that we could use computing power to circumvent traditional banking systems. And it's really expanded in interesting ways from there. I think there was this idea that Bitcoin was going to be this global currency that would be useful for everyone, and it would change the way that we transact with each other. It would change economic systems. I'm not sure if Bitcoin will be that currency, but it has certainly launched this idea and all of this research into other forms of cryptocurrency, and they might look a little different. But this idea that we might one day have cryptocurrencies that are competing perhaps with the major reserve currencies is not an entirely unlikely scenario.
With no centralized bank, it seems like there is potential for illicit use of the currency, perhaps hackers. Let's bring in Peter in Friendship with a question along that line. Hi, Peter.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good.
Good morning. I have a comment and question. The comment I have, the concerns I have is the cryptocurrency, and I've seen quite a few of them that are coming on board that they're talking about, quite a few banks that are looking at it. The concern I have is someone had to write the code initially to get these things started. So it's not a computer-generated code. Somebody had to write the code. That's the concern. That, in fact, makes them basically banksters on the digital world. However, the other concern I have is the network. The network itself is unstable, meaning there is no secure line that's out there. It doesn't matter how many bits of encryption that you go through, but if somebody takes out the grid, the network grid, then your money is gone. There is nothing there. But the other question is if the cryptocurrency is supposed to be as secure as possible, how can one say that they have no control over the cryptocurrency that they are creating?
Jen, go ahead.
So, yes, the code was certainly written by humans, and it's all, it's open source. The idea is that anyone can sort of see any transaction. Theoretically, all of, it's not that your name is out there, of course. That's encrypted. There's a key. But the idea with this is that it's as transparent as possible and that everyone can see how the system works. And in fact, the way that the blockchain works for Bitcoin is that every transaction is attached to all the ones that precede it. So any sort of anyone who tries to tamper with one part of the system, it will be a red flag in the rest of the network, if that makes sense. So, you know, nothing, of course, in technology is unhackable. Anyone who says that, we will find ways to hack things and to break into them in the future. But the Bitcoin network has not been hacked. Applications that are used to move the currency around have been, but the network itself has not yet been. And I think that's really promising to a lot of people.
Although there is still the vulnerability and the potential for that, do we see any signs of the federal government moving to try to quell this currency, to perhaps shut it down?
I don't think that the federal government, I don't know what the federal government will do, but I don't think there's necessarily a desire to shut it down.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that there is going to be regulation coming down the pike. I mean, we've been talking about regulation for a long time with Bitcoin. What is it going to look like? Where do you even attach the regulation to a decentralized system? But more and more people are thinking about this, and it's becoming urgent at a time when you have people investing and getting involved in a new way. And it's not just the early adopters who were quite savvy, of course, in the how it works of Bitcoin. Now you have people getting involved who might not understand at all how it works and how all the applications work. And so now there's this frenzy to say, okay, we have to figure out how to regulate this. And there's the pushback from how is that going to affect the innovation. But at this stage, it's clearly, it's clearly headed toward more regulation.
How has Wall Street viewed cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin? I just recall this Instagram photo of pop star Katy Perry having a sit-down conversation with Warren Buffett about Bitcoin.
So, a lot of Wall Street and, of course, Warren Buffett, who, don't invest in things you don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was a lot of speculation and still is a lot of speculation about Bitcoin and whether it is a worthwhile investment. But I think the fact that there is so much public interest and that there is going to be, more interest and more research and more usage of blockchain technology means that Wall Street is getting involved. And it's what the people want right now. People are interested in getting involved in this. And it's an entry point into a wider world of cryptocurrencies and blockchain technology and how that will affect finance in general. So there's certainly an interest from the financial world in the technology. And I think Wall Street is taking Bitcoin more seriously, perhaps just as something that is interesting. Whether or not anyone thinks it is a good investment strategy, I'm not sure. And I really don't know. And I would not want to give anyone investment advice.
The skyrocketing price and interest in Bitcoin has made it a greater target for attacks. Bitfinex, a large Bitcoin exchange, said Tuesday it was trying to deal with a heavy denial of service attack. Coinbase, one of the leading services for trading Bitcoin, said outages are to be expected during times of significant volatility or volume. We are getting up to speed on cryptocurrency this hour with Scientific American senior editor Jen Schwartz. Her magazine will publish a Bitcoin special report next month in which she edited. Your thoughts on Bitcoin, your questions as well, 800-642-1234. Do you think you want to buy some Bitcoin? Why or why not? What confuses you about cryptocurrency? Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll be back after a check of the latest news. Bitcoin soared to another record high this week. One of the biggest providers of digital currency wallets, Coinbase, it crashed from the high volume, leaving many of its more than 10 million customers unable to access their funds. But spikes in volume is a problem faced by all financial exchanges, not just cryptocurrency platforms. Consider that the price of Bitcoin has doubled four times this year. We're exploring the world of Bitcoin on this Hour of the Morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Scientific American senior editor Jen Schwartz is with us. She edited a new special report called The Future of Money. It appears in next month's magazine. You can join the conversation about Bitcoin at 800-642-1234. Do you see Bitcoin as the way of the financial future? What do you think of peer-to-peer networks? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Calvin, who joins us from Platteville. Hi, Calvin.
Hello. I actually listened to you guys came up with the second question, if that's okay as well.
All right, well, go ahead with that first one.
Okay, my first one is about levels of or the possibility of income tax evasion. We already have people who work for cash or do trades in kind to avoid income taxes and payroll taxes. Large amounts are prohibitive with our current cash system, you know, paying for a new car or re-roofing my house in cash would be difficult, but it sounds like with Bitcoin, I could pay for a new car with Bitcoin, and the dealer wouldn't have to show that as income the same way as if I paid for it with cash and he chose not to report it.
Yeah, let's get Jen to weigh in here on income tax collection.
So we're getting into the weeds a little bit here, but it is true that because there isn't yet regulation around a lot of this, I think one of our experts in the report did say that he does not think that many people are paying honest taxes on Bitcoin, on the Bitcoin that they own and they're spending. So it's true that this is part of the larger Wild West of how this is going to shake out. And certainly how people pay taxes on Bitcoin is yet to be determined.
And Calvin, you can follow up. What was that other question?
Well, my other question is, with the does the expert think that the volatility or the dramatic appreciation of Bitcoin in such a short time will make it less likely to be used as a currency? Because I don't know about you, but if I'm holding a dollar that I think that in a week is going to be worth $500, I'm not about to spend it today.
That's an excellent question, and that is what a lot of these sort of thinkers are talking about. Is Bitcoin true money? You know, if it does not have secure value and it is not backed by assets or government promises and it's fluctuating so wildly, is it usable? I think right now it's seen really as an interesting investment, but I don't think in terms of the future of Bitcoin and whether it is Bitcoin going to become the sustainable currency, it doesn't look like that right now. And that is what a lot of experts are wary about, that if Bitcoin was supposed to be created to be this true alternative currency, that is certainly not how it's playing out right now.
Let's go to Galinda, who joins us from Milwaukee. Hi, Galinda.
Hi. I was calling because I actually love Bitcoin. I don't know if it's going to be the one that pans out in the future, unless there's someone else that comes up with a better model that's decentralizing. And I just started buying October 24th. I bought $1,000 worth, and in 43 days, I made back my $1,000. And so what I'm doing now with the $1,000 I made is I'm also letting that grow into another $1,000. And then I'm putting it on a treasure, which is a cold storage, which is offline, like a USB, for each one of my kids, for their future. And although we're not Venezuela, where people do have to live off of it, for many of us, it is an investment towards the future, because we all believe that the dollar is going to crash. So wake up to that news. And my other question was, is to her, if she could explain to the listeners how only Bitcoin is the only one that's decentralizing, while all the other cryptocurrencies, there's someone behind those currencies. For example, if for some reason somebody was doing something wrong in that group, they have to be shut down by the feds or somebody, then everybody's stuff is locked up in there. But that's not true with Bitcoin, because nobody owns it. There's no one to lock it down. There's nobody to run off with it. It's just the code is just out there running.
Well, Galinda, thank you so much for calling in with your experience. Jen, what about, first of all, Galinda's strategy in how she is approaching Bitcoin and saving?
So when we were putting this special report together, it was about the same time that she bought, she invested in Bitcoin. And, we were joking that if we had done so, we would have doubled our money by now. But, during the fall, Bitcoin also dropped by 40%. And the week we were, putting the issue to the printer, it dropped by a significant amount. And so it's going up and down, and we don't know what's going to happen. I think if... there's all sorts of ways to think about it, but, what has been shown historically with Bitcoin is it is trending upward. That is true, but we don't know if it will always, continue doing so long term, and it's still early days thinking about it as a long-term strategy. But it has really been all over the place. So, we don't know where it could be next week or next month.
But I think Galinda also makes a point that there aren't suits behind Bitcoin who are controlling the strings, who are controlling some of the mechanisms of shaping the currency.
That is true, and that's a huge part of the appeal, and that's really a lot of the reason why it was brought on in the first place and why people are interested in it, because it really speaks to the idea of, how can we trust banks? Can we, trust this traditional banking system that for many people feel it has failed them, or they are not getting something fair in return from participating in that system? And there is a huge allure to feeling like you have more control and actually having more control in terms of transactions. And so, as much as there is that volatility, there is a real, element of being in control of your banking and of participating in the system that circumvents the traditional power structures.
Well, let's squeeze in another call here. Emery is with us in Port Washington. Hi, Emery.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Your previous caller mentioned other decentralized technologies. And a quick comment, I think that we've talked about blockchain, but there's a new decentralized technology that's emerging that I think will offer some advantages to blockchain. It's called Hashgraph, and I'll spell it just so your audience can do some research. H-A-S-H-G-R-A-P-H, Hashgraph. Not necessarily a question about that, but if you really want to blow your mind, go have a look. And then my question is, what's so interesting to me about cryptocurrencies generally is that I think it's encircled by what I view as cryptoeconomics. And my understanding of cryptoeconomics is that each of these cryptocurrencies that we're seeing be created is coded with a sort of constitution of values under it. So the different political views that the coders have, they will structure their currency to reflect those values. For example, a lot of people say Bitcoin is a libertarian cryptocurrency. Different democratic values and even anarchist values can be baked into these currencies. I do see a world few decades out where there are many, many cryptocurrencies, and we will view them as means of expressing our political values. So if I use Bitcoin, I would be ascribing to the values that the creators coded into that currency. So I think just I want your guest's comments on the field of cryptoeconomics, and if, she sees it the same way.
Jen, go ahead.
Yeah, that's a fascinating part of all of this, and the part that's most interesting to me is how this is really a much bigger story about the evolution of trust and of how we express almost our identities and what is meaningful to us through transaction and through trade. And so I completely agree that there are going to be cryptocurrencies where there is a certain ideology baked into the code. And what's fascinating right now is that there's almost a battle for the soul of Bitcoin. A lot of this libertarian idea of it needs to be fully decentralized and no regulation. And as we see regulation creeping in, and how do we deal with this energy-intensive problem? Well, we have to make it more centralized so we're not using so much computing power. These things are highly controversial to the original community that saw Bitcoin as a real philosophy, really, of how to trade. So there's definitely going to be a much bigger discussion about what it means to build certain cryptocurrencies, and not just the currencies, but building other things on the blockchain, and what it means to operate using this technology, not just from a technical perspective, but from the social one as well.
Well, Jen, as we start to wrap up here, what are you watching for going forward with Bitcoin and cryptocurrency in general on the landscape?
I think the most interesting thing going forward will be how we start to look at, really this idea of compromise, of what is the purpose of a cryptocurrency? Who is it for? Are these large banks going to use this technology, and that will become dominant? Will there be new cryptocurrencies coming out of academia that that this kind of address a lot of the issues that we're currently looking at? And so I think we're going to see different kinds of cryptocurrencies. I think the conversation will become less fixated on Bitcoin and more about sort of the larger emerging world of what this technology is touching. And I think that's what we're going to see going forward. And I think that's where the entry point is for sort of more people who might be a little wary of Bitcoin or perhaps don't care as much, but start to see that this technology is touching much more out there, and that it may touch their own lives as well.
Well, Jen, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Jen Schwartz is a senior editor at Scientific American. She's the editor of a new special report called The Future of Money, which will appear in the January issue of the magazine. This Hour of the Morning Show was produced by Chris Molina. Ideas Network Director Cheryl Gasser provided on-air technical direction. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this conversation on Bitcoin you hear on the Ideas Network.